I'm telling you, there was not one day in my life that I regretted that decision. I wish I could have done it sooner. Everybody who moves here tells me the same thing. I wish I had done it sooner.
One of the many great things about doing this podcast is learning new things. I'm Elizabeth Pearson Garr. And when my guest on this week's episode of What It's Like To told me what she wanted to talk about, I think I just sat with a blank face for a moment because I had no clue what she was talking about. So join me to either learn or possibly learn more about geo-arbitrage with Jules Vitality. Jules, I'm so happy to have you here on my podcast because I know I'm going to learn a lot from you. You introduced a new term to me. You are living by geo-arbitrage. So first of all, I'm hoping you can define that for those of us who might be unfamiliar with that term.
So basically, geo-arbitrage is a strategy that allows you to make living where you want to live more affordable. There are options that are a lot more affordable that are potentially going to allow you a lifestyle that is a higher level lifestyle compared to where you may potentially be right now. There are other countries that you may not have even thought of that can allow you a better lifestyle.
It kind of increased probably in the pandemic when people could do some more remote work. And so you could potentially live in a different place, maybe even domestically or internationally, and take your job and live in a place that cost of living is a lot cheaper and you can still get your same income, but live somewhere else. So how did you decide to do this? What is your background? What is it like to do what you're doing? Where are you?
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Okay. So I started this research when I was living in Canada. So I'm not natively Canadian. I was born in Ukraine, in the Soviet Union. And when I was in my late teens, my family moved to Canada. So in a way, that was also geo-arbitrage, but sort of in an opposite way, because we were coming from a third world country into, you know, first world country. So there was a steep learning curve on different ways to live. But it also afforded me an opportunity in 20 or so years that I lived in Canada to build up a bit of a cushion that allowed me to even consider the fact that I could potentially be living somewhere else. So this is how it started. I was on a train for over an hour to my job downtown Toronto, and I was into audiobooks, and one of them was on investing, and somehow this concept came up in the book, and they said it's a lot more affordable than you think. And they really started breaking it down that if you plan it just with a little bit of time and patience, you can actually save up enough money. You can generate a side hustle you can do online that it can support your level of living in another country where your currency has a decent or pretty good exchange rate. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. So I was already a serial side hustler. I was already, you know, doing a few things. But looking at it from that perspective, I'm like, hey, I can actually have a payoff to all this, not just monetary, but a little bit of something on the side could actually sponsor your full cost of living abroad to also supplement your income. So she gives different strategies, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners can just do their own research. But the cool thing was that it really motivated and inspired me to dream. So I was like, where would I want to live? You know, I didn't really even consider living anywhere outside of Canada being an opportunity that's open to me because, oh, hey, my parents brought me from Soviet Union. I should be happy where I am, right? But I wasn't. I never really felt like Canada was my home. So I subscribed to a magazine, and it was meant for retirees, but it was basically describing different places in the world and how affordable a living can be, and had these beautiful pictures of beachside living. And I was like, really? Is it possible?
Sparked your interest.
I'm not retired. You know, I don't have a retirement income coming in, because it was basically targeted to those people. So the combination of two things, doing the research and understanding that there are options, dreaming and building a plan, and understanding that even if you are not at retirement age, but you do have retirement savings, you have options to use that money to maybe get you through that building phase where you're maybe building a business online. And then, you know, once you're there, it's a lot easier to do. And it's going to really take you a lot less than it would have in your home country. For example, a level of living in Toronto, Canada, where you can rent an apartment for, I'd say, minimum $2,000 a month. Then if you have your transportation expenses, which really just went up after the pandemic, if you have a car, a very, very high cost of owning a car, insurance and all that, just groceries, phone, like just the basic expenses alone, you are looking at, I'd say, $5,000 to say you're living not comfortably, but you're kind of like out of poverty. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's how much you need to afford to live if you're a single person. If you're a couple, if you have two incomes, obviously some of your expenses are going to be higher, right? So combined, let's say maybe 7,000. If you have children, you're looking at 10,000. So that's $10,000 you need to generate as, let's say, a couple, right? That's a, what, 120 a year with an average tax rate of 40% at that tax bracket, if not higher. Let's just round it up to 50 because there are a lot of deductions. You are looking at making close to $200,000 as a couple to be able to live out of the level of poverty in Canada. And where is the minimum wage, right? So that same...
Not that high.
Exactly. But inflation is rising and all of the costs are rising. So it's, you know, catch 22, right? Well, let me give you an example of a place in this country where I live. So I live in Mexico now. I live in sunny Mayan Riviera, right on the Atlantic Ocean shore. I'm going to give you prices in Canadian dollars so you can take 20-25% off of that if you're looking in American dollars. So your rent could be as little as, let's say, if you're a single person or a retired person, as little as $300 to $400.
What?
Yes.
That's astonishing.
It is. So the place where I live right now, Cancun, is a commercial center. The prices have been driven up by tourism. There's also a lot of local Mexicans that come from larger cities. They bring their families because they want a more relaxed pace of life. So it drives up the cost of living in Cancun. So the prices I'm going to give you for Cancun is not an indication of what's possible. It's an indication of an average. Okay. So the prices that I just gave you, it's an indication.
These are higher prices?
Yes. So I'm going to give you an example of where I live. So for about 900 Canadian dollars, let's say 7 to 750 American, okay? I currently live in a gated community. It's called Privada. So it has a private entrance. In fact, it has two security points. So it's very secure. It feels like your own neighborhood, your own little town. So my area has its own pool with a party area where I can host events, which I just did. The Privada has its own soccer field, its own children's park, an outdoor gym, and an indoor gym. So this is the complex where I live. My personal house, which is like a row townhouse, has a backyard, has three levels. This is costing me $900 Canadian, $750 American.
I mean, that's incredible. Quality of life is so much better for housing.
Yeah.
But some people might say you are trading. Okay, I'm just looking at practically. You left your family and your friends. I don't know if you could take your work or you created a whole new business, but I don't know if you knew the language. I mean, there's a lot to consider.
There is.
When you are moving fully to a new country,
there is.
Too.
So the
you
same,
have to create a whole new life for yourself.
The same magazine actually publishes an annual chart of top 20, I'm sure it goes to 100 countries to move to. At the time I was researching it, number one was Portugal, which was on my list number one. But the borders closed during the pandemic, so it was not an option for me. Number two was Costa Rica. Number three was Mexico. Number four was Panama, and so on. There are a lot of Asian countries like Thailand and Vietnam is getting up there, Indonesia. And those charts take all of these questions into consideration. Safety, ease of assimilation, culture, even food. Like it goes into a lot of aspects because people are concerned with all of these things. And for different people, different things may matter more than others. And they score them. Mm-hmm. And that's how they create the list. But you may not value something like language, for example. And you may want to maybe look further down the list for things that are actually important to you. So it is important to do your research. And every country, every destination now has a billion YouTube videos about it from expats, from people who are looking into different options, from people who live there, from travelers. You can do so much research just by watching YouTube. That's what I did. And that's how I found the places that were options. That's how I zeroed down my options. And you research at cost of living. There are websites where you can, well, you can Google cost of living in. There are websites that convert cost of living from your currency to their currency. You can say, how much is car insurance on average, for example, right? So for me, car insurance here for, you know, a gently used vehicle, full coverage pretty much, is about $200 Canadian a year. I used to pay 250, if not 300 a month in Canada.
A month, sure.
Okay. And yeah. I just had a little fender bender. Service was super. You actually call them, they come, they evaluate. Two insurance guys come, one for one vehicle, one for the other. They determine the fault. You don't even have to call police. The experience was very, very pleasant. Cost of vehicles is comparable, I would say. Some are higher, some are lower. But you don't even have to have a vehicle. Most of these destinations have very good transit systems. If you don't have the language, it may be a little bit harder. So with the language, there are a billion apps.
Did you speak Spanish?
I did not.
Before you went?
But everybody has Google Translate on their phone. You don't even need to speak the language. You know how people talk here? They would dictate what they want to tell you. If they need to tell you something in English, they would dictate it to their phone and Google will translate it right to you. Or if you want to do it through text, all of the communication can be written or verbal. But Google has voice recognition. It speaks for you. You really, really don't need to have that as an obstacle. That's what I'm trying to say. I love Spanish language. I love the sound of it. I like the music. So I wanted to learn it. For the first year and a half, I didn't even need it. I lived in a smaller town, perfect way to blend in into a new culture full of expats. All of the locals hear you speak English, they switch to whatever limited English they have. So my Duolingo is a free language learning app. There are many, but this is the one I use. I try to do 2 minutes every day, and literally it adds up. It adds up so much. So it's not an obstacle. Language is not an obstacle. And this is one of the reasons why I chose to go to Mexico instead of, for example, Thailand or any Asian cultures, because even though there were more appealing things about those parts of the world to me, I knew the language was going to be more of a challenge for me to learn. Like, imagine learning Chinese. You know, it's obviously Spanish and English have the same alphabet. A lot of the words that have Latin origin that are, I'm guessing, half the time. Like, for example, you want to say the word like inequality. You think about it in English and then kind of know how to pronounce the letters differently. And you go, okay, inequalidad. Mm-hmm. Television. Televisión. You know, look, they're the same words. It's just you kind of learn how to put a different end into it. There are audible courses that I've taken, literally just cleaning my apartment, listening to them. You know, you just get all that Spanish information to you, listening to music. Lots of ways to learn a language in a non-pressure way. And the very, very affordable tutoring as well, because people who live here, they don't have to earn as much. So you get your online or in-person tutors for a fraction of the cost if you really need to have that help.
Do you consider yourself a really independent and adventurous person on the far end of the spectrum to have done this? Like, when you decided to do this, what was your experience of actually getting there and making
alone.
That adjustment?
I wasn't alone. At the time, I was with my ex-partner and our kids. So it wasn't as scary as doing it alone. But now that I've done it, I think I probably would totally do it alone. I totally encourage everybody to do it alone. There are so many people that are moving down here alone and they're having a blast. And literally, they attract like-minded people left and right. It's so easy, especially depending on which place you move to. If there is a higher expat population, higher tourist population, you do end up meeting a lot of people. Imagine you're going through a market and you hear another person or another couple or another family speaking your language, you're going to go and meet them, right? It's so easy. But to answer your question, it was a process, I'd say. So back in the day, single travel, an idea of that was intimidating to me. So a couple of times I had to travel for work alone and, you know, no choice. They send you, you go, right? And I'm like, hey, this is not bad. Okay. Then I discovered that one of my classmates from the school I went to in Kiev, she was living in California. So I took a flight from Toronto to California twice to see her. And again, that was amazing. I met cool people along the way. I had cool conversations with people on the plane. Actually allows you to have conversations because you're not in your small bubble with a couple or with a friend. are alone, so you're a lot more open to speaking to people. So you make new connections. The whole experience was amazing. And being there as a visitor alone, people want to accommodate you when you're on your own, even if you're as a family or a couple. Like, honestly, people just are so welcoming when you're traveling that it completely changed my perspective. So it removed that fear from me. So people who rarely travel, who don't get out of their town or their comfortable place of living or their little circle, but them, of course, thinking, oh, I'm just going to move abroad. It's very intimidating. So start small. Take a trip, take a drive out, then take a, you know, a train ride, then maybe take a plane out, maybe go to a conference. That is actually a really good way to get into traveling. Or go attend an event that's of interest to you. Maybe it's a show, maybe it's Vegas, whatever it is, right? Just go and see what it's like. So I'd say a lot of the stuff we tell ourselves as to why we can't is because it's imaginary. Those are imaginary fears, mm-hmm. right?
Because we haven't tried.
We haven't tried it.
And you can do this geo-arbitrage also domestically. Maybe it doesn't feel as intimidating to people. Say you live in a more expensive area, in a city or somewhere on a coast or something. You could rent your place out and go live in just a less expensive, smaller city just for a season or a month. You know, it doesn't have to be like you're making an entire lifestyle change. You don't have to commit to changing things forever, but you could actually save a lot of money and have an adventure.
Absolutely.
Just domestically as well.
That was actually plan A. Plan A was to sell our house in Toronto. We're going to rent a small house in the Niagara area, which is about an hour and a half out of Toronto. But there are a lot of small towns that are just up and coming. And there was a lot more affordability there. So that was actually plan A. And then we're thinking, okay, then we're going to do more research, you know, save up, da-da-da. Then when we feel comfortable, we're actually going to make the jump. Well, the more research I was doing about the town that I already chose in Mexico, the more I was itching to go. I just suggested it. I said, well, instead of us going through all that hassle, looking for a place there and moving this, that, why don't we just go? We're already going to simplify. So that is actually one thing I want to cover maybe right after this is simplifying your life because you don't have so much to worry about. So we took 5 suitcases. We came here and I said, listen, if we come and we don't like it, we'll consider this an extended vacation. We will return and we will do our plan A. We'll look for a place and we'll do what we wanted to do. But if it works out and we just saved ourselves a year of living in this temporary place, not knowing if it was going to be beneficial or not. And I'm telling you, there was not one day in my life that I regretted that decision. I wish I could have done it sooner. Everybody who moves here tells me the same thing. I wish I've done it sooner. Not just here. I'm talking to expats all over the world. So go ask those people. If you have a place in mind, or if you don't have a place in mind, maybe you have a lifestyle in mind. You can really connect with people from anywhere through Facebook groups, through websites, there are organizations. You can talk to real people who've done it. I downloaded a bunch of Audible books about international travel, about backpacking. Some people start with hostels. Like there was this one guy who wrote a book about his hostel and adventures. I don't know how many countries he did. You don't have to commit. You can check it out that way. Because I had 2 little ones, I kind of had to have a bit more of a semi-permanent arrangement. But my dream, like deeply down inside me right now, is to become a digital nomad. Some people do it out of their RV locally in the States and just drive through different beautiful surroundings, natural parks, wherever they want to be, wherever they want to stop. And really, location independence is so close to my heart that not only do I have a business that allows me that, I teach other people how to get there with their businesses. Because I think being an online service provider is what enables people to have this lifestyle anywhere in the world.
Yeah, so I'm curious. I want to talk about your work, what you were doing there, and how your lifestyle transition affected your work choices.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was initially working remotely for a company. And it was becoming very, very stressful. And due to other circumstances in my personal life, I ended up going on a leave of absence, during which I had a lot of reflection and therapy and awakenings and lots of podcasts on overcoming depression and anxiety, figuring things out, getting out of mental fog. And that's how I got to become a supporter of a few channels and a few podcasts that were teaching people how to basically fix your mindset, first of all, because I think my mindset was in the wrong place. personal development was a huge, huge element in me breaking out of, I don't want to blanket it as corporate slavery, but for a lot of us, it is. We feel like we're stuck and we have no other choice. So for me to make a leap to actually say goodbye to my job, I wrote a goodbye letter to my job. And when I did that...
That's bold.
Yeah, that was tough. But I had to do it. I had to do it because I knew for a while that I had to get out. But it was a super, super hard thing to do. Not really knowing where I was going. Knowing that this is where I want to be, but not knowing how. And I just had to jump and then just see. So it was kind of like swimming in the lake, not seeing the horizon, right? But knowing that eventually I'll probably hit an island or something.
You knew you were going in the right direction. You just didn't
I was
know
leaving the shore where I did not want to be.
It would take. Yeah.
I was swimming away from the shore where I did not want to be. And I didn't really care what other shore I was going to hit. As long as I was getting farther away from the shore where I felt like I was in prison. It was like swimming away from Alcatraz.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Right? Oh, that's a powerful image.
Yeah. So I had to basically rely on a lot of the experience that I did get from a corporate job, from all my side hustles, rely on a lot of the information that was out there. But in the way, there was too much. So you kind of have to pick and choose what you want to do. But the thing that helped me the most is determining what my values are and how I want to serve the world. What makes me feel fulfilled? What way of service generates the feeling of satisfaction for me? And how to create a business around that idea? And John DeMartini takes the credit. He has a value assessment online you can do for free. I've done it a few times in my life. It really helped me figure out what I want to do in my life. And his theory is that you can really turn any passion into a business with the right framework, obviously. So right now, I run a podcast and a show. And because of my experience being in the digital public relations field, I'm also teaching people visibility, different ways of making it online. And I work with entrepreneurs, coaches, mission-driven service providers. And I'm helping them make a greater impact on this world. That's why my channel is called Positive Impact TV, because it's all about us creating that momentum of positive change. We give others, others give to others, and we make this world a better place. And the universe will never leave your pockets empty. It will always, always provide, if not in one way, in another. If you are making money, you can use that money to supplement your transition period. You can invest it into your business. You can invest it into your coach. You can invest it into your training. You can get started and you can get there sooner. So having that cushion, knowing what ways you have available, and that's where geo-arbitrage comes in. There's actually financial ways to sponsor yourself with all of these little things that you maybe don't even consider you have. So it's not even just about having income right now. It's about all these locked-in funds that are no longer locked into you when you leave the corporate world. They're only locked in if you are still making good money. Then if you want to take a penny out of those locked in accounts, they're going to be taxed through your nose. So they're making it difficult for you to take that money out. But as soon as you step out of that system, so many doors open up. So many other programs open up. There are programs for starting a new business, for learning new skills. And another consideration a lot of people have is medical.
Yes. That's huge. Yeah. Medical. And also, like, what are the tax implications of doing this? I mean, there's a lot of practical issues involved with doing this. So like you mentioned, you really do have to do your research.
Yes, but don't let the research overwhelm you. I'd say start with a visit. Start with a longer visit. A lot of people come here for a week first, 2 weeks, then 3 months, then 6 months. Then in the next 6 months, they're making it possible at home. They're simplifying. They're getting rid of junk. If they haven't completely made up their mind, they're finding a storage area where they want to put their most valuable belongings. But honestly, one of the best feelings for me was when we sold our house, which was at least 3 bedrooms. So there were 2 units. One was upstairs, 3 bedrooms, and a garage full of boxes, you know, because in Canada, you kind of have to store your winter stuff when it's summer and vice versa. So you have a garage full of boxes.
A lot of stuff.
I remember how good it felt putting everything on Facebook Marketplace, having people come and giving it to them for next to nothing. I remember I had my baby cribs, all my baby clothes, toys. And this one pregnant, obviously immigrant woman came and She's like, I only have $50. And I said, take all of this. Please, take it all. And I felt so good, wonderful. You know? Because I know she's going to be able to use it. And I don't have to put it into the dumpster.
Yeah.
So a few boxes remained up till a couple of months ago. And I made a trip to Canada for another reason. And I sorted through the boxes, said goodbyes. There were a few photo albums that had physical pictures. I literally took out maybe an inch high stack of pictures. And I said to the rest, thank you and goodbye. Some of them I took pictures of with my phone.
Yeah.
But the rest of that really doesn't matter because you really cannot carry your garbage with you. If you have a dream of the future, you need to say goodbye to your past.
Oh, that's powerful. I like that.
Make your dream a reality. You cannot hold on to your past. It's going to keep you in prison. It's going to keep you hostage. You know, you can retain your best memories. It's like creating a virtual picture board or picture album in your head of your memories. You can still appreciate them. You can appreciate even people who have hurt you. You can appreciate the good moments you had with them. So you retain that. You appreciate the things in your past. Like, I appreciate my career for teaching me a bunch of skills that I'm able to implement in my business right now. But at the same time, I can say goodbye because I no longer belong there. I'm no longer a hostage to a 9-to-5 corporate environment because it wasn't conducive to who I am as a person.
Yeah.
And the medical system, I just wanted to mention about the medical system, that it is extremely, extremely affordable in the countries other than the United States. For those of you who are in the United States, I'm not even going to mention it. It is a fraction of what you guys are paying. So I'll give you an idea. There are pharmacies here who have a doctor on staff and it's pay what you like.
Oh.
Or nothing.
Wow.
Like you can literally, if you can't afford to pay for medical consultation, you don't pay anything. If you want to pay, you know, 100 pesos, which is $5, you pay that. Some of them have their prices starting at $2.50 for a medical consult.
Amazing.
Okay? If you want to go see a specialist, it may cost you maybe $200 to see a specialist. And there are no wait lines like in other countries. Mind you, if you are unhealthy, then you can also purchase insurance that is going to subsidize your repetitive expenses. But also keep in mind, with a reduced level of stress and a completely different level of wellness, living by the sea is a medical term. Breathing ocean air is going to improve your health a billion times. Having sunshine every day, putting your feet on the ground, on the sand, on the grass, every day connecting to the earth, your health is going to improve. Your medical expenses are going to go down. Improve your life, reduce the level of stress, have more joy and happiness in your life. Your health is not going to be a problem.
So you're pretty happy with your lifestyle change, sounds like.
Encourage everybody. If anybody has any questions, you guys know where to find me, positiveimpact.tv. I'd be more than happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you so much, Jules. Really appreciate all your time and for just informing me and all of us about these different ideas and all the choices that you've made. It's really opened my eyes.
Everybody's super welcome. I encourage everybody to dream and don't be scared. Make a plan, ditch that fear, and do it.
It's definitely inspiring to meet someone who's living their best life. I learned a lot from Jules, and not just the definition of geo-arbitrage. Here are some of my takeaways from our conversation. Number one, think broadly. You may assume you're planted in one place, but it's always possible to plant new roots somewhere else. The world is waiting. Two, before taking any big action, do your research. There are lots of opportunities. Find one that best suits you and your interests. Three, it's never too late to learn something new, like a new term or a new language. Four, take some chances, get out of your comfort zone. You might surprise yourself. Five, we don't need as much physical stuff as most of us have. And finally, number six, dream, and then follow up those dreams with action. I'd like to thank Jules Vitality for sharing her time and her experiences with me. If you'd like to learn more about Jules, please check out the show notes for this episode on our website, whatitslike2.net. You can also find all of our past episodes there. If you like listening to interviews with female entrepreneurs, you may want to check out episode 37 with Aisha Fatima Dozier, the founder and CEO of Bossy Cosmetics, and episode 40, when Nancy Mueller shares how she went from making quiches for cocktail parties into a multi-million dollar business. If you're enjoying this podcast, please follow us on social media and tell a few friends about it too. I'm Elizabeth Pearson Garr. Thanks for being curious about what it's like.